Chapter 56. Nicholas, accompanied by Smike, sallies forth to seek his fortune. He encounters Mr. Vincent Crummles, and who he was, is herein made manifest. The whole capital which Nicholas found himself entitled to, either in possession, reversion, remainder, or expectancy, after paying his rent and settling with the broker from whom he had hired his poor furniture, did not exceed, by more than a few halfpence, the sum of 20 shillings. And yet he hailed the morning on which he had resolved to quit London, with a light heart, and sprang from his bed with an elasticity of spirit which is happily the lot of young persons, or the world would never be stocked with old ones. It was a cold, dry, foggy morning in early spring. A few meager shadows flitted to and fro in the misty streets, and occasionally there loomed through the dull vapor the heavy outline of some hackney coach wending homewards, which, drawing slowly near, rolled jangling by, scattering the thin crust of frost from its whitened roof, and soon was lost again in the cloud. At intervals were heard the tread of slipshod feet, and the chilly cry of the poor sweep as he crept, shivering, to his early toil, the heavy footfall of the official watcher of the night, pacing slowly up and down and cursing the tardy hours that still intervened between him and sleep, the rambling of ponderous carts and wagons, the roll of the lighter vehicles which carried buyers and sellers to the different markets, the sound of ineffectual knocking at the doors of heavy sleepers. All these noises fell upon the ear from time to time, but all seemed muffled by the fog, and to be rendered almost as indistinct to the ear as was every object to the sight. The sluggish darkness thickened as the day came on, and those who had the courage to rise and peep at the gloomy street from their curtained windows crept back to bed again and coiled themselves up to sleep. Before even these indications of approaching morning were rife in busy London, Nicholas had made his way alone to the city, and stood beneath the windows of his mother's house. It was dull and bare to see, but it had light and life for him, for there was at least one heart within its old walls to which insult or dishonor would bring the same blood rushing that flowed in his own veins. He crossed the road, and raised his eyes to the window of the room where he knew his sister slept. It was closed and dark. "Poor girl," apostrophe thought Nicholas, "she little thinks who lingers here." Apostrophe, he looked again, and felt, for the moment, almost vexed that Kate was not there to exchange one word at parting. "Good God!" Apostrophe, he thought, suddenly correcting himself, "what a boy I am." "Apostrophe, apostrophe, it is better as it is," apostrophe said Nicholas, after he had lounged on a few paces and returned to the same spot. "When I left them before, and could have said goodbye 1,000 times, if I had chosen, I spared them the pain of leave-taking, and why not now?" Apostrophe, apostrophe, as he spoke, some fancied motion of the curtain almost persuaded him, for the instant, that Kate was at the window, and by one of those strange contradictions of feeling which are common to us all, he shrunk involuntarily into a doorway, that she might not see him. He smiled at his own weakness, said "God bless them," apostrophe, apostrophe, and walked away with a lighter step. Smike was anxiously expecting him when he reached his old lodgings, and so was Newman, who had expended a day's income in a can of rum and milk to prepare them for the journey. They had tied up the luggage, Smike shouldered it, and away they went, with Newman Knox and company, for he had insisted on walking as far as he could with them, overnight. "Which way?" apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Newman, wistfully. "To Kingston first," apostrophe replied Nicholas. "And where afterwards?" apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Newman. "Why won't you tell me?" apostrophe, "because I scarcely know myself, good friend," apostrophe rejoined Nicholas, laying his hand upon his shoulder. "And if I did, I have neither plan nor prospect yet, and might shift my quarters 100 times before you could possibly communicate with me. Apostrophe, I am afraid you have some deep scheme in your head," apostrophe said Newman, doubtfully. "So deep," apostrophe replied his young friend, "that even I can't fathom it. Whatever I resolve upon, depend upon it, I will write you soon. Apostrophe, you won't forget? ... said Newman. I am not very likely to, ... rejoined Nicholas. I have not so many friends, that I shall grow confused among the number, and forget my best one. ... Occupied in such discourse, they walked on for a couple of hours, as they might have done for a couple of days, if Nicholas had not sat himself down on a stone by the wayside, and resolutely declared his intention of not moving another step until Newman Knox turned back. Having pleaded ineffectually first for another half mile, and afterwards for another quarter, Newman was fain to comply, and to shape his course towards Golden Square, after interchanging many hearty and affectionate farewells, and many times turning back to wave his hat to the two wayfarers, when they had become mere specks in the distance. Now listen to me, Smike, ... said Nicholas, as they trudged with stout hearts onwards. We are bound for Portsmouth. ... Smike nodded his head and smiled, but expressed no other emotion. For whether they had been bound for Portsmouth or Port Royal would have been alike to him, so they had been bound together. I don't know much of these matters, ... resumed Nicholas. But Portsmouth is a seaport town, and if no other employment is to be obtained, I should think we might get on board some ship. I am young and active, and could be useful in many ways. So could you. ... I hope so, ... replied Smike. When I was at that, you know where I mean. ... yes, I know, ... said Nicholas. You needn't name the place. ... well, when I was there, ... resumed Smike, his eyes sparkling at the prospect of displaying his abilities, I could milk a cow, and groom a horse, with anybody. ... ha! ... said Nicholas, gravely. I am afraid they don't keep many animals of either kind on board ship, Smike, and even when they have horses, that they are not very particular about rubbing them down. Still you can learn to do something else, you know. Where there's a will, there's a way. ... and I am very willing, ... said Smike, brightening up again. God knows you are, ... rejoined Nicholas. And if you fail, it shall go hard, but I'll do enough for us both. ... do we go all the way today? ... asked Smike, after a short silence. That would be too severe a trial, even for your willing legs, ... said Nicholas, with a good-humored smile. No. Godalming is some 30-odd miles from London as I found from a map I borrowed, and I purpose to rest there. We must push on again tomorrow, for we are not rich enough to loiter. Let me relieve you of that bundle. Come. ... no, no, ... rejoined Smike, falling back a few steps. Don't ask me to give it up to you. ... why not? ... asked Nicholas. Let me do something for you, at least, ... said Smike. You will never let me serve you as I ought. You will never know how I think, day and night, of ways to please you. ... you are a foolish fellow to say it, for I know it well, and see it, or I should be a blind and senseless beast, ... rejoined Nicholas. Let me ask you a question, while I think of it, and there is no one by, ... he added, looking him steadily in the face. Have you a good memory? ... I don't know, ... said Smike, shaking his head sorrowfully. I think I had once, but it's all gone now, all gone. ... why do you think you had once? ... asked Nicholas, turning quickly upon him, as though the answer in some way helped out the purport of his question. Because I could remember, when I was a child, ... said Smike, but that is very, very long ago, or at least it seems so. I was always confused, and giddy at that place you took me from, and could never remember, and sometimes couldn't even understand, what they said to me. Let me see. ... you are wandering now, ... said Nicholas, touching him on the arm. No, apostrophe replied his companion, with a vacant look. I was only thinking, how apostrophe he shivered involuntarily as he spoke. Think no more of that place, for it is all over, apostrophe retorted Nicholas, fixing his eyes full upon that of his companion, which was fast settling into an unmeaning stupefied gaze, once habitual to him, and common even then. What of the first day you went to Yorkshire? Apostrophe, apostrophe, eh? Apostrophe, apostrophe, cried the lad. That was before you began to lose your recollection, you know, apostrophe, said Nicholas quietly. Was the weather hot or cold? Apostrophe, wet, apostrophe, replied the boy. Very wet. I have always said, when it has rained hard, that it was like the night I came. And they used to crowd round and laugh to see me cry, when the rain fell heavily. It was like a child, they said, and that made me think of it more. I turned cold all over sometimes, for I could see myself as I was then, coming in at the very same door. Apostrophe, as you were then, apostrophe, repeated Nicholas, with assumed carelessness. How was that? Apostrophe, apostrophe, such a little creature, apostrophe, said Smike, that they might have had pity and mercy upon me, only to remember it. Apostrophe, you didn't find your way there, alone. Apostrophe, apostrophe, remarked Nicholas. No, apostrophe, rejoined Smike, oh no. Apostrophe, who was with you? Apostrophe, apostrophe, a man, a dark, withered man. I have heard them say so, at the school, and I remembered that before. I was glad to leave him, I was afraid of him, but they made me more afraid of them, and used me harder to. Apostrophe, look at me, apostrophe, said Nicholas, wishing to attract his full attention. There, don't turn away. Do you remember no woman, no kind woman, who hung over you once, and kissed your lips, and called you her child? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe, said the poor creature, shaking his head, no, never. Apostrophe, nor any house, but that house in Yorkshire? Apostrophe, apostrophe, no, apostrophe, rejoined the youth, with a melancholy look. A room I remember I slept in a room, a large lonesome room at the top of a house, where there was a trap door in the ceiling. I have covered my head with the clothes often, not to see it, for it frightened me. A young child with no one near at night. And I used to wonder what was on the other side. There was a clock too, an old clock, in one corner. I remember that. I have never forgotten that room, for when I have terrible dreams, it comes back, just as it was. I see things and people in it that I had never seen then, but there is the room just as it used to be, that never changes. Apostrophe, will you let me take the bundle now? Apostrophe, apostrophe, asked Nicholas, abruptly changing the theme. No, apostrophe, said Smike, no. Come, let us walk on. Apostrophe, he quickened his pace as he said this, apparently under the impression that they had been standing still during the whole of the previous dialogue. Nicholas marked him closely, and every word of this conversation remained upon his memory. It was, by this time, within an hour of noon, and although a dense vapor still enveloped the city they had left, as if the very breath of its busy people hung over their schemes of gain and profit, and found greater attraction there than in the quiet region above, in the open country it was clear and fair. Occasionally, in some low spots they came upon patches of mist which the sun had not yet driven from their strongholds. But these were soon passed, and as they labored up the hills beyond, it was pleasant to look down, and see how the sluggish mass rolled heavily off, before the cheering influence of day. A broad, fine, honest sun lighted up the green pastures, and dimpled water with the semblance of summer, while it left the travelers all the invigorating freshness of that early time of year. The ground seemed elastic under their feet. The sheep bells were music to their ears, and exhilarated by exercise, and stimulated by hope, they pushed onward with the strength of lions. The day wore on, and all these bright colors subsided, and assumed a quieter tint, like young oaks softened down by time, or youthful features by degrees resolving into the calm and serenity of age. But they were scarcely less beautiful in their slow decline than they had been in their prime, for nature gives to every time and season some beauties of its own, and from morning to night, as from the cradle to the grave, is but a succession of changes so gentle and easy that we can scarcely mark their progress. To Godalming they came at last, and here they bargained for two humble beds, and slept soundly. In the morning they were astir, though not quite so early as the sun, and again afoot, if not with all the freshness of yesterday, still, with enough of hope and spirit to dash bear them cheerily on. It was a harder day's journey than yesterday's, for there were long and weary hills to climb, and in journeys, as in life, it is a great deal easier to go downhill than up. However, they kept on, with unabated perseverance, and the hill has not yet lifted its face to heaven, that perseverance will not gain the summit of at last. They walked upon the rim of the Devil's Punch Bowl, and Smike listened with greedy interest as Nicholas read the inscription upon the stone which, reared upon that wild spot, tells of a murder committed there by night. The grass on which they stood had once been dyed with gore, and the blood of the murdered man had run down, drop by drop, into the hollow which gives the place its name. The Devil's Bowl, apostrophe thought Nicholas, as he looked into the void, never held fitter liquor than that. Apostrophe, apostrophe, onward they kept, with steady purpose, and entered at length upon the wide and spacious tract of downs, with every variety of little hill and plain to change their verdant surface. Here, there shot up, almost perpendicularly, into the sky, a height so steep as to be hardly accessible to any but the sheep and goats that fed upon its sides, and there stood a mound of green, sloping and tapering off so delicately, and merging so gently into the level ground, that you could scarce define its limits. Hills swelling above each other, and undulations shapely and uncouth, smooth and rugged, graceful and grotesque, thrown negligently side by side, bounded the view in each direction, while frequently, with unexpected noise, there uprose from the ground a flight of crows, who, cawing and wheeling round. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.